Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide current educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children, and by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education. Here are your hosts, Paul Tooley and Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. Today we're talking with Wayne Batson. And just tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I live in Maryland, grew up in Maryland, still live there, and I'm a teacher of 20 years. I teach reading and English in a public middle school in Howard County. Got interested in writing for my students when I found like there were not enough high-interest stories to get especially the boys into reading. And this was back in the 90s, before Harry Potter and all those things hit the market. So I started writing short stories for the kids, and they kind of liked them and pressed me for more, and eventually got me to the point where I had a whole novel, and that's when the first contract for The Door Within came about, and I guess it was 93-ish, 94 or something.
And what was it? What was it for the Dora?
2004, right?
2004.
So yeah, that was the first one.
And it was, what was the title again?
It was The Door Within.
The Door Within.
Which became a trilogy a little bit later.
And your students, you would write these stories, and then the students would read them because, after all, their teacher had
sure.
Yeah,
well,
these
students were my inspiration and my first line editors. So I would read chapters to them, and they would literally threaten to strangle me if I didn't have the next chapter finished. But their reactions were great because they are so honest, and you know, I'm just their teacher. So if they didn't like something, they had no problem letting me know.
Yes. I teach middle school math, so I know what you're talking about there. Now, you've started a book called Sword in the Stars. Is that as a result of working with these young people?
It is, actually. Sword in the Stars came about through two short stories that I started working on with the students that I realized at a certain point, wow, this is really one story, but it's a bigger story than I thought. And now Sword in the Stars is the first book of a 7-book series. So it's this great big epic fantasy that came out of these two small kernel ideas that I use with my students for years.
You know, I can just imagine as a student sitting in your class, and I would be very engaged if I knew that my teacher cared so much about me that he was willing to spend all that time to come up with something so imaginative. Now, would you say that this is in the genre of Christian fantasy or just fantasy?
Well, it's fantasy with Christian themes, no doubt. And this is, you know, all of these stories have Christian themes, and yet all of them I wrote in a public school setting. So it's been kind of fun. You know, you'd think, oh, I bet there was some opposition. And really, there hasn't been, at least not yet. You know, next year there could be some uppity parent who says, you're teaching our kids, you know, Christianity. But so far, there really hasn't been any. And I think the story still resonates whether the reader is a Christian or not. I think there are hopeful themes and you know, things in there that just about any parent would approve of.
I think that's one of the things that intrigued me the most, because here in Education Currents, we're always looking for ways to witness or to bring hope in the public school setting without offending anyone,
right,
by speaking overtly in Christian terms.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that readers are smart enough to know when someone has sacrificed a story to just kind of give you an agenda. And that's one of the things that I have tried to do from the very beginning, is make sure that the art is up to the quality of the message. Well, it'll never be up to the quality of you know, the gospel, but at least something I feel like is my best effort and something that people can look at and say, wow, that was a great story, whether they noticed the Christian themes or not.
And even like C.S. Lewis, he has a lot of pagan characters, but yet he has Christian, it's a Christian theme.
Sure.
Now, you were once coined that you could be the next, you know, could the next Harry Potter be a Christian? What is your take on that? I mean, is that something that is a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, you know, it's funny when that phrase was used, certainly it's flattery because the Harry Potter phenomenon, this is once in, a generation or two generations, the way those books exploded and resonated with kids. So to have someone, look at my stories and think, wow, there's the potential there for that kind of an explosion. You know, that's a good feeling. It makes you feel like you're reaching a pretty broad audience and has the potential to reach even a larger audience. But by the same token, I think what a lot of the news agencies were trying to do was trying to oppose me to Harry Potter. They wanted to put me up as the traditional fundamentalist Christian, mm-hmm. Against Harry Potter. They tried to kind of bait me with, attempts to put Harry Potter down and say how terrible it is. I'm sure they wanted me to say Harry Potter is a synonym for Satan or some other strange thing. So in that sense, it felt a little like being used as a cardboard cutout against Harry Potter.
So this book is The Sword in the Stars. I want to make sure our listeners know the title. And it is the first book in the Dark Sea Annals series.
That's right.
Yeah, I got that correct. And you have a website that they could go to? And
sure. It's www.swordinthestars.com.
www.swordinthestars.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about your early years.
As a writer or as a young man?
As a young person. I always am interested how your upbringing could lead you to this point in your life.
Well, it's funny. You look back and you think, well, if one step had gone differently, I'd be in a much different place. And I really feel like God kind of positioned me to be a storyteller because, my family, my mom and dad, married, and my mom brought three children to the marriage, and the closest one in age was 5 years older than me. It's my brother Brian. And so they were always older and had things to do on their own. And so I was much like an only child, and I had a lot of adventures in my backyard or in the creek down the street catching crayfish or, Star Wars figure forts up in the crabapple tree and, just making up my own stories the whole time. Somebody's in danger. Oh, no, they fell in the swimming pool. What are we, that kind of thing. So that was pretty much being a kid tromping around in the woods and having adventures riding my bike all over the place and dueling mysterious invaders with tree branch swords and that sort of thing. I guess as a teenager, I got into writing poetry as kind of a catharsis. Those teenage years are rough. And so I just put every passion that came to mind into poetic form and sometimes song lyrics and ended up in a band for a while and got interested in writing by reading The Lord of the Rings. Just thinking, wow, how can somebody with two-dimensional words on a page have such an impact, on a reader? So that was pretty much me in a nutshell on how I ended up getting into
fiction. So you became an English teacher.
Yes, and that was, I wanted to be a writer right out of high school, but my parents thought, well, you're not going to be a blockbuster hit writer right off the bat. You need something to pay the bills, and we have a family history of teaching, and they said you could probably do that very well. And so I got into it, and I thought, I don't know if I'm going to like this very much, and they gave me sixth graders, and I thought, oh no, I wanted high school. These little kids, these rugrats, what am I going to do? But they were wonderful. I loved the middle school atmosphere, and it was fantastic. And so when I finished student teaching, I looked for a position teaching sixth grade, and I've been teaching sixth and seventh grade for 20 years ever since.
I like that age group too because they're mature enough so they're not totally devastated by your sense of humor. You can kind of get by with a little bit more jostling back and forth for, with verbal comments and whatever.
Sure.
And they still haven't lost that imagination that, I don't know, we kind of discourage it. And I want to talk about imagination because I conservative Christendom does discourage imagination. We're going to take a break right here and then we'll come back.
Mama! Mama, where are you? Mama!
There are over 145 million orphans in the world today, and how can we help? Well, first of all, you can pray. Take courage from the life of George Mueller, who raised $225 million in answer to prayer alone and saved thousands of orphans from lives of appalling destitution. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and I've chosen Restore a Child as the humanitarian organization I'm going to support.
To make a donation, go to www.restoreachild.org or call 877-745-7833. That's 877-745-7833.
Hi, I'm Joy Michaels, and welcome to Heartbeat. Today, I have on a pair of Gap jeans and New Balance tennis shoes. Did that one sentence help you formulate an idea of who I am? So much of today's culture revolves around labels. Even during times of recession, having the right shoes, bags, and sunglasses seems to define a person. If a person isn't wearing the coolest clothes, then he or she just isn't cool. Aren't you worth more than the clothes on your back? The next time you watch a commercial or hear one on the radio, try and remind yourself that your things don't dictate your worth. Your character does. Heartbeat is brought to you by the Salvation Army.
Okay, welcome back to Education Currents. We're talking with Wayne Batson. And I was asking you a question just before the break about your take on imagination and the Christian walk. Why is it important to develop our imagination rather than stifle it?
Well, I mean, the scriptures tell us to be heavenly minded. And yet we're told that, you know, glory is beyond, you know, our imagination. So we're left with this kind of conundrum. We're trying to imagine the unimaginable.
Yes.
But I think it serves the Christian well to think often of what heaven will be like because, I mean, honestly, we're living in a broken world right now. And there's heartache and there's pain and there's sadness. And those things can weigh on a person after a while. And I think to exercise your imagination and think of what heaven might be like, what, you know, if God created the world in 7 days and yet Jesus has been preparing a home for me for 2,000 some odd years, you know, how incredible could it be? If I'm amazed by a sunset and a waterfall here, you know, what could there be in heaven that would just blow me away? I remember one time just on the stoop in front of our house watching the sun go down, and it was a particularly gorgeous sunset. I'd never seen a sky quite like that. And I was overwhelmed almost to the point of tears, and I almost felt like God was saying, "You think that's something? Just wait." And I think it's a real shame that, you know, Christians are in some places discouraged to use their imagination because I think it kind of stunts our growth in 100 different ways that, you know, God can use our imagination to solve problems, you know, to maybe look at a disease cure from a different angle, to look at a way of, you know, increasing church attendance from a different angle. You know, these are instruments God gave us, so, and He is the creator. Why wouldn't we, made in His image, be creative? And so, you know, I'm glad to see a lot more, you know, Christian fantasy and Christian fiction in general being published these days. It shows that maybe some doors are starting to open and maybe we'll take a foothold back in the arts that we used to own as
yes.
Christians, but gave up to the secular world.
That's right. Now, the characters, tell us a little bit about the characters and how you came up with them.
For Sword in the Stars?
Yes.
The main character in Sword in the Stars is Alistair Coldhollow. He's a former assassin who becomes kind of a prophet, unwillingly, but in search of the only thing he thinks will bring him some sort of redemption for his past. He goes looking for the world, this world myriad, their messiah. They don't call him that. They call him the Halfender. And they're hoping, or he's hoping, that by finding this messianic character, that he can somehow get redemption for everything he's done. When he sees the sword in the stars, that's the sign that this Messiah character has come. He goes searching. He goes to the one place, the city of jewels, Thel-Mizaret, where the he believes the Messiah will probably be. And he basically has a Messiah hero tryouts. You know, runs all these talented, gifted youths through this gauntlet of sword play and different activities because he's supposed to be this tremendous warrior and fails miserably. I mean, all the teenagers, one way, you know, one thing or another blows up in their face and it's just not working. So he becomes pretty much destroyed by the fact that, you know, the sign was there, the sword was in the stars, the moon was blood red, and yet there's no one to redeem me. And, you know, that kind of puts him off. And he's in the middle of a society that has this great king overlord named Erevel. And Erevel has a twin brother named Morlin, who was born a few seconds later than him, and has rued that fact ever since. And there's a lot of conflict, and there seems to be a war brewing with this enemy race called the Gorax, but there's a suspicion that Morlin has had something to do with it, and perhaps wanting to create the equivalent of a world war so that he might be able to step in and take his place on the throne. So you have Alistair in the midst of this trying to find a messiah in the midst of a great big calamity war. He does find, you know, Alistair, I'll tell you this much, he does find forgiveness, but it's not where he thought he would get it. And that's one of the themes that I hope to develop in the whole series, is that God is full of surprises.
I can hardly wait to read it. So, and the names sound foreign to me. How did you come up with the names for your characters?
I'm kind of a nutball when it comes to names. I spend, you know, way too much time thinking of names. I always wondered at Tolkien and how his names were just perfect. Somehow they fit. And he was a linguistics master. You know, he knew all the old languages. He translated, you know, Norse myths and things like that. So he knew the languages. So I've really delved into the languages, looking at root parts and what they mean. And I'll take a long time putting together, mixing and matching parts. I've even gone on Celtic baby name sites to find names. Sometimes a student name will pop up, and I'll think, that would be a good story name. I had a Sir Rogan who was in the Door Within series based on a student I had named Brian Rogan, and another student named Antoinette who sounded such a neat-sounding name, thought I'd use it in the Door Within as well. Alistair Cold Hollow, his name came about all at once. And it wasn't from word parts or anything else. It was just one of those gift-wrapped packages from God, you know, in the imagination where I thought, that's him.
Do you ever dream at night, and some of those, what you dream becomes part of what you write about?
Sure. And sometimes I don't even remember it until I've got it in the prose. And then I'll think back and say, did I see that? Was that a deja vu? That was a dream. That was what that was.
Deja vu. It's interesting to understand a little bit about the mind of a creative person, because they tend to be quite abstract, random, and right-brained, and they do remember their dreams, whereas a concrete sequential doesn't seem to remember their dreams or care about remembering them. I don't know which it is, but it's interesting. So your students know you write this. They don't necessarily know, as a, you know, because it's the public school arena, they don't necessarily know that it's Christian based or has Christian themes in it. But my question is, you have a certain standard. You know, you have in, you're in Maryland, so you have the MSAs.
Mm-hmm.
And are you able to incorporate what they need to be prepared for those tests in the literature that you write?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the Door Within series, my first series, I wrote with cues, strategic cues, all throughout the book, all throughout the trilogy, places where the strategies that we teach, the cognitive strategies, things like predicting, inferring, visualizing, connecting, those sorts of things, there are actually little cues in there that I taught students to recognize so that they could, you know, oh, I bet I know what's going to happen next, or he's not telling the truth, is he? That sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it really worked great. We would do this this classroom activity called the Reading Roundtable, where we get together and each student would have their own role and discuss the story from one of these strategic standpoints, and they really got a lot out of it. And that's one of the things I love about middle schoolers is, I think it was Natalie Babbitt, you know, the author of Tuck Everlasting, she said that, you know, the young people are a lot more intelligent and perceptive than we older folks tend to give them credit for. And through these books, The Door Within, the Sword in the Stars, my pirate books and all that, the students have had some discussions that just left me speechless. You know, they'd come up with themes, and there's always, you know, two or three Christian students who will come up with something and broadcast it loud to the whole class. Yes. And very good. That's, wow, so you made a very interesting connection there. What do you think about that, Bob? You know, that kind of thing.
And yes.
So it gives kids in the class a chance to witness and, you know, hopefully gives God a chance to work through the story as well.
Now, as we come to the conclusion of our show, what advice would you give to parents? Parents want their children to succeed. They need to be encouraging. But what advice would you give to them?
Well, to parents in general, there's a lot of advice. One thing, I believe that reading leads to success. So the more parents can model reading for their kids as a pastime, not just I have to read this tax form because grumble, but sitting back and reading a novel for fun. If you've got younger kids, read to them. Get goofy, let your hair down and do the accents and talk like this, and we're marching on the castle, and that sort of thing, and be animated, be excited about it. Make the library a reward that will go, and you can get more books this time. Not you have to, but you get to.
Yes.
Those would be advice based on reading. I guess life advice, I'm still working on that. I've got some, my first daughter's into teenage years now, and it's quite a bit of trial and error. I think trying to model the unconditional love of Christ, as they make many errors, will help probably a lot. I think even when my kids are in their worst times, they always come back and know that they're loved.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for being with us. And our listeners can go to your website, www.theswordandthestars.com.
Yep.
Okay, and so what other places can our listeners go to learn more about you?
Well, they can go to my main writer blog, which is www.enterthedoorwithin.blogspot.com. Young readers can get all kinds of writing advice there, too. I've got tons and tons of articles on how to get published and how to write suspensefully and that sort of thing.
Fantastic. I'm sure our listeners will love that, and our teachers, too, can use that to encourage their students.
Sure.
Well, we have one last thing to say, and that is keep learning.
You've been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media. We're now on Facebook, and we'd love to have you join our discussion. Once you're in Facebook, just type in the name Education Currents. We'll also like to thank our production staff, the various networks that make this broadcast possible. For more information on education topics, go to educationcurrents.com. That's educationcurrents.com.